Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Carulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Wake up, Hollywood.
Dude, you were so quick on the fade. You were like, I want to get in there.
Let's just get this going.
Yeah.
Let's just open it up.
You know, it's funny. Whenever somebody else co-hosts with me, it's like...
They let the whole thing play?
Yeah, they don't let the whole thing play, but sometimes they'll take a little bit...
People don't tune in to listen to the intro song.
And I'm like, wow, this is like a long fade.
Oh.
Eddie, it's good to have you back.
What's going on?
All the way back from...
Calgary, Alberta.
How was that?
Canada. Great.
Was it cold?
Wasn't that bad. It was like 50 during the day.
Actually, the weather there is nice, right? Because it's spring-ish?
No, it was in the 30s at night.
Really?
Yeah. Whew. 50s Man. In the day. It wasn't
and
too
you
bad.
And you were performing there. What was the club that you were playing at?
The Comedy Cave in Calgary.
All with C's.
Yeah. The Calgary Comedy Cave.
Have you played there before?
Yeah, one other time. Canadians are fun. They're great. They're great. They love comedy.
I'm sure everybody was just drunk off their ass.
Yeah, there's a lot of drunk people. And so the Flames are like in the playoffs, so they're just going nuts.
That's nice.
The whole city was going nuts with
the
Flames.
Were you a hockey fan for like a week?
I get to the point where I was like, I hate the Flames because they're ruining the shows.
That would be annoying.
Because the playoff games are during the show nights, and it was just like, just please either win or lose. So they were.
Let's get it over with.
Yeah. They were supposed to win Thursday night, and if they'd won, they would have closed out and then gone to the next series. It would have been fine, but then they lost. And then so they had another show on Saturday night, which screwed up the Saturday show. And then they won. I'm like, you dicks.
Were people like, oh, in the middle of your set and stuff
like
that?
Yeah, people were watching. You're on stage and you see like 20 cell phones light up every 5 minutes.
That's annoying. I would have just been like, you know, usually most clubs say you can't do that. Like, you can't check your phones.
Well, they do, but that's not.
But it's playoffs and
it's a comedy
Canadian.
Club. Yeah, there's no rules in a comedy club.
And you did an hour every night, huh?
Yeah, 50 minutes usually.
Dude, that's going to be refreshing, leaving L.A.
It's nice. It's weird because you have to leave L.A. to feel like you're an entertainer. Because when you're in L.A., you just don't...
It's just because there's so many.
There's so many entertainers here.
Yeah, it's like everybody's just like, you get the gig, man?
You don't feel... Like, you go to do a set somewhere, you try to get up somewhere, people are like, no, I don't know if I can get you in. And like, you don't feel like you're special. You go up there, you go to a comedy club out of town, you're like, you're the entertainment for the night.
I think it's just so different. Everybody's just worried about the rent. You know what I mean? Like, for all the venues. It's like, they just want to feel... They don't care about necessarily.
Well, yeah, and if you drop out, it doesn't matter. There's 300 other comics waiting to get up. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah, and not only that, it's like the thing that's annoying, I think, just in entertainment, being in an entertainment city, is it doesn't matter if it's good or bad as long as there's people in there.
Yeah.
And there were clubs, like, I don't know if you – did you ever go to the – you went to the Temple Bar. You saw us play at the Temple Bar.
Yeah, I remember that.
So I used to love that venue, not only because, you know, I loved playing it, and it wasn't the biggest venue that we ever played, but every night you could walk in there and you'd see a killer band. You'd see great music. You'd see, like, Prince would do a secret show there. Like, it was just an awesome, awesome venue. Yeah. And then I sold that, and it just went downhill from there. Now it's called the Dakota Lounge. We played there once or twice when it first opened, and just to see if it was different. And it was just – it's just not the same. And venues are always changing. They're like either – you know, House of Blues is leaving Hollywood. They're moving locations. Yeah. Same with, I think the Comedy Store is also...
I don't know about that. I don't know.
I heard the Whiskey, the Comedy Store, and the House of Blues are all leaving Hollywood. And they're all moving to a different location. My theory is they're going to just trick out Hollywood and Highland and make it like Universal City Walk.
I hope not. It's already annoying there.
Yeah, it's. But you know what? That's just kind of like they're just trying to...
When is all that supposed to happen?
It's supposed to happen in about a year.
Yeah. I haven't heard anything about the comedy. You're the only person that's told me anything about the comedy.
Yeah, I read in an article. It was the Whiskey, the Comedy Store, the House of Blues, and one other venue that's like a shitty
bar. I don't know if they would reopen the Comedy Store somewhere else.
Really?
Are they doing bad? No, they're not doing. They're doing great right now. But I just don't know. I don't know. I can't imagine that venue going somewhere else because it's where it is.
Well, there must be some kind of like like contract where all the venues say we'll all leave together and go to some.
Yeah, but I can't imagine. I mean, the Comedy Store is historic because of the location it's in.
And you know, House of Blues is like that too.
Yeah, but House of Blues has only been around since.
Yeah,
that's not like an historic.
No, it's not as historic. It's been there since like the I think early 90s.
Early 90s. I mean, the Comedy Store has been there since like. I mean, first of all, it was like a restaurant in like the 50s, and you know, it was.
How long has it been there? It's like.
As the Comedy Store, yeah. I think the 70s. I think it opened up as a comedy, or maybe the 60s.
And the Laugh Factory. How long has that place been there?
I think the 80s.
Hmm.
But the Comedy Store is like historic. I mean, the whole comedy boom of the 80s was like took place there.
All
like,
the cocaine.
That's where like going yeah. Those but like it's clubs. It's like if they wanted to that building could probably get like a historic landmark.
Yeah, and you know it's a shame, but you know it doesn't matter because
that's why I don't think you can like move the Comedy Store somewhere else.
Oil investors, I think, are buying the entire all the land, and they're just going to turn it into hotels.
Because that's what people want. Let's go stay in a hotel and go outside of our hotel and see
and
other
see
hotels.
Hotel. Yeah, it's kind of sad. They're kind of taking all the culture out of Los Angeles. I'm kind of bummed about that. But
well, because it's so expensive that it's the same thing that's happening in San Francisco, where it's so expensive to live in the city that all the artists are being forced out. So there goes the culture.
And that's what makes the city cool.
That's what makes the city cool. Otherwise, it's just this homogenized, just buildings of condos and apartments and
well, soon it'll
that
just
no one
be,
can afford
be,
IT people.
It'll be hotels and it'll be studios.
And all the culture is going to be on the outside of the city.
Yeah.
So no one's going to go into the city because it's too expensive.
Well, that's good on some levels, but it's just it's shitty for people that love this city. I mean, I love Los Angeles and going down the Sunset Strip. Like the funny thing is I played every single club, pretty much every single club on the Sunset Strip. And headlined every single one. And
Seventh Veil? Did you play Seventh Veil?
Seventh Veil. That's a strip club, isn't it?
You said every club.
Well, every music club. Oh. But and now it's like I drive there. And, you know, House of Blues is the only club I really want to play. And even that's changing. Everything is changing on the strip. And the strip itself is going to be a hotel strip soon. Probably
yeah, that's what it is.
Years.
There's going to be no reason to go there. And then they'll realize that. And then
you know what's going to be really shitty? I have a feeling they're going to make it so it's like you're gonna have lounge acts in these hotels. It's gonna be like you're gonna do comedy. It'll be like a mini Vegas, and it's gonna be so cheesy. I hope that doesn't happen, but I see that happening because I don't know. You have a bunch of people that are not from the country investing in property and businesses here. It's gonna be a very different vibe altogether.
Just sad,
but that's all right. That's all right. We'll you know let's. Let's be optimistic.
Yeah.
Maybe it's going to be awesome.
We'll go to Orange County and do shows.
Have you done shows in Orange County?
Oh, yeah.
What's the club you hit up there?
It's wherever you can go up.
And you do the Ice House, right? Pasadena.
Yeah.
Dude, that's Ice House. That's my shit.
That's a great club. That's a great club.
So when's your next show?
Tomorrow night. I'm in Venice at the Comedy Underground.
You don't sound too enthralled.
No, it's a great show. It's one of the best shows in L.A.
Well, let's do it. Let's start over. What are you playing tomorrow night?
I'm still jet lagged, so this is as much excitement you're going to get out of me right now. I've yet to have caffeine today.
Did you have any poutine in Canada?
What's poutine?
Poutine is
that poutang?
It's not poutang. It's French fries with like gravy and cheese on it.
Sounds gross.
It's kind of gross.
That sounds
it's not
disgusting.
It's not my favorite thing, but it's a big Canadian thing.
No, didn't have that.
Did you have any Calgary?
I had KFC one day.
You had KFC in Canada?
Yeah, KFC, Chipotle.
Oh, man.
So pretty much what I eat here.
You're like, you didn't really venture out.
It's a great thing about being American. You seek out other American food when you go out of the country.
Well, some people do. That's crazy. Well, I think our special guest for the evening has just rung the doorbell, Mr. Nick Ferrara, how are you?
Hello, good evening, gentlemen.
So, Eddie, Nick and I went to high school way back in the day.
I heard. There's
way
rumors
back in the
about
day.
That.
There are
did
rumors
you guys go to
about
prom
that.
Together?
We did not.
Oh. A good 60% of them are true.
Lots of partying. No, we used to play basketball together, and we just came up in the same.
What position were you in basketball?
I was a point guard. I used to be able to play back in the day, but everybody grew, and then I didn't. So I was like the Gary Coleman of the basketball courts, man.
Peaked a little early. Junior high, you were dominating.
Dude, I was dominating in junior high. I was.
You were CP3.
Yeah, but then everybody grew, and it was just like, okay, this music thing is going to work.
Okay, I got to find something else to do.
It's so funny. My parents were actually like, you know, everybody's growing. You may not be the basketball star that you may think you are, so you may want to focus on music. I'm like, it's probably a good idea.
That's nice that you couldn't follow your basketball dreams, so they gave you your music.
Well, you know,
dream.
It's probably, you know what? One worked out, so.
It was a pretty nice parent.
Quite well for you, I would say. Huh?
Hey, they're good. They're smart parents. I'd be still like, I still got a chance.
I could do it.
I'm in the European
League.
I'm in
the D League. It's going to happen.
So, Nick, you've been emceeing and hosting all kinds of crazy events, the Kentucky Derby, NASCAR events, the Super Bowl. Tell us, like, how you got into hosting. You're, like, I think our first host that's not on the show as a host, but as a guest. You're our guest host.
Yeah, it's strange being on this side of the microphone. It feels good, you know, especially when I'm in a room with comedians, musicians, and usually I'm doing the one firing the questions at them, so it is a little strange for me. I'm kind of getting used to that.
Well, you can interview us the whole hour. That's fine. It's less pressure for me.
No, that's not that much fun.
I mean, yeah, it is Hollywood, so it's a great place. People love talking about themselves. So
how'd you get into it?
You know, I was looking for a career, and I just wasn't happy. I was teaching high school, actually, and coaching high school basketball, and I said, you know, I got to do something else here because I realized on $30,000 a year that I probably was going to be homeless pretty soon here in LA. Right. And
where were you teaching?
I was teaching at Laguna Beach High School, of all places.
Oh, wow.
Right around the time that Laguna Beach was on TV, so it was kind of interesting. But
were you teaching at that high school?
I was there, yeah. Wow. Justin Cavallari and, you know, the whole
crew. Oh, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, transitioned to the Hills, yeah. And so, you know, I always said I wanted to do something that I was kind of shy in high school. I really wasn't that outgoing as far as, you know, doing entertainment type things. I wasn't involved with, you know, choir or chanteurs, the kind of things you were involved with.
Right. I was.
I wasn't a musician. I wasn't in drama. And I was like, I need to find my niche because I see this. I kind of got this bug all of a sudden that I wanted to get my 2 minutes of fame, you know, or find some kind of thing where I was the
just
focal
2 minutes.
Yeah, I mean I was willing to settle at that.
Most people want at least 15.
Yeah, seriously, man.
Achievable dreams. That's the whole goal. That's the whole process of success here. But you know, and I said I got to find a way to do that. And on weekends, I was passing out Wrigley's gum for $15 an hour to make a little extra money. And I was doing these events that were cool. And I saw a guy on the mic and I was like, that's a pretty cool job. His job is to talk to the crowd and entertain people and
fire them up.
Yeah. And fire them up. And it's like, that's kind of cool, you know, and introduce athletes and things like that. And I had seen some of these things throughout my, you know, my life. When I was in college, I went in 98 and saw, you know, Jordan's last year with the Bulls. And I remember like hearing the introductions from Michael Jordan, you know, at 6'6" from North Carolina. I was like, the little hairs on my neck, just like they did right now, stood up. And I was like, I would like to do something like that, you know? But then I was like, I don't see that guy. I want to be able to be seen at the same time. And so, you know,
one knows who that guy is.
Yeah, I see. And, you know, but.
See, I would have been like, I want to be Michael Jordan.
That was Nike's job.
That's, I'm a dreamer, and that's how
I
feel. I
want to be Michael Jordan, but I just don't have the height.
I don't want to
fail. Well, there's always Spud Webb, but, you know.
Yeah.
That's crazy. So what was the moment where. Was it a specific game? Was it the Bulls game that was like,
this is it. I want to do something like that. You know?
You're like, this is it, but I want to be seen.
Yeah, I want to be seen. That was, you know, the one quota that I put in there. And so then I found this job, and I said, hey, I want to MC. And the lady was like, you know, we hire MCs time to time. It was for the Pro Beach Volleyball Tour at the time. And I got a phone call like 6 months down the road. Hey, this guy's got laryngitis. You're going to hop in here. Like, can you send us your reel and everything? And I was like, real. Like,
what's
what
real?
You know,
prior to that, did you have any sort of emceeing experience at all? Like
zero.
Talking in front of a crowd with a microphone? You didn't none of that?
The Senior Talent Showcase. I was actually a rapper in high school, and that was about. That was
yeah,
about,
yeah. Oh,
can you drop any lyrics right now?
Yeah, drop some lyrics.
Yeah, man.
Nikhil can beatbox.
You're putting him on the spot, dude. He's turning red, man. Come on, be nice.
But, like, that's weird. Like, you got a job without ever being in front. Like, that would be nerve wracking as hell.
It was, trust me, and it was not a pretty beginning, you know.
Like, yeah.
Because
it takes a certain amount of confidence and like at ease to MC something. It's not like you're an act in the show because you can kind of lose yourself in the act when you're doing like if you're doing music or even comedy if you're just part of the show. But if you're MCing the show, there's that thing where you got to like keep the show going, like pick the crowd up if they're down.
Yeah, it can
and
be
all
painful,
that. Like, there's a lot of things you got to juggle.
And it's quick
there.
Too. You don't have enough time to develop. And grow with the
That's
audience.
Crazy. Like, your first thing was like you had no prior experience in front of us.
Bad,
that's
dude.
Crazy.
And I didn't know anything about beach volleyball, and I'm introducing athletes and trying to do interviews, and I have no clue what to talk about, you know. And, you know, this is before the days of the internet, so it was like I couldn't just pop up my phone and be like, here's this
YouTube.
Whole Wikipedia on this guy, and be like, bam, we're good.
So
to
you had
go.
To like, you had like have stats and stuff memorized and
I
names.
Had to memorize things.
Plus, be able to go off the cuff and then go back on the script. That's
yeah.
That's difficult.
It's
Our studio audience is impressed.
That's difficult.
It's multifaceted, too, because, you know, you have sponsors, and you got to say that tagline exactly the way they want it said. So it's a little bit of acting, a little bit of a lot of comedian work, because it's a lot of improvisational skills that you need, because all the time things are changing, and it's like you have to do that because you're hearing in your earpiece or they're telling you in a note, but there's 2,000 people in front of you, and you're like, you can't just pause. Which,
yeah, I mean, the limited experience I've had emceeing things in that effect, it's hard because you do have to improvise, but then you have to weave it back into the script because you do have to do those sponsor names and then get back out of that and be present again. That's a really difficult thing.
And your mind's probably racing. You're like, what am I doing next? How do I get out of this? What do I do?
Oh, yeah. Anytime I'm interviewing someone, I'm never listening to the interview. You know, I'm thinking about my next question. So yeah.
Don't tell anybody that.
Well, that's most conversations with most people.
yeah, especially here in
Hollywood. No one's ever listening to anybody.
Yeah. What was that, Eddie?
Just kidding. That's you terrible. Say something?
So, Eddie, you said you're a professional hockey player. Is that what
you're that's what I do.
He plays for the Flames. In there, for the Flames.
But, yeah, it's just that's a crazy intimidating thing to just jump right into.
Yeah.
And how was it? How'd it go?
It was ugly. It was really ugly.
Really?
You know, but, I mean, they were paying me a whopping $150, so, you know, I was excited about that, thinking, wow, this is better than $15 an hour. I made almost twice that today.
Right.
Looking back, you know, it's funny now, I send people my quote, and they're like, well, yeah, we weren't really thinking in that neighborhood. I'm like, I have another guy that will do it. You know, I mean, back then, I would have done any job on the corner, standing to MC anything just for the experience, and now I have the experience and I have the confidence, which is the key element to my job because...
And you're getting crazy gigs, too. I mean...
Yeah, and they get
Kentucky
crazy
Derby. How did you get to the... Like, what was your first, like, major gig that you did? Do you remember?
You know, there's been so many. It's been a roller coaster because I still do many this day that are, like... They could be... I'm on paper, and to be truth be told, they're pretty lame gigs, but they may pay the most. So it's a very deceiving industry. You know, like, passion-wise... I've had some amazing jobs, you know. I've got to work. I'm a basketball guy. I got to work with the NBA and the NFL. But a lot of times, that you know, they're not paying the most because they don't have to. You know, you're paying for the experience, and you need that kind of stuff on your resume, and they understand that. So, some of the clients that I've had are clients no one's ever heard of, working at a trade show booth, but I'm getting paid, a mint to go.
Isn't
up there
that weird how the industry's like that? The industry, I think, as a whole, is like that for even musicians. It's like some of the
they know there's
gigs.
Another three bands sitting behind you that will take your spot.
But I think when I was getting into it, I always thought, oh, it's going to be like those gigs pay the most, and then those other gigs you just do just to like be consistent with work. But it's usually the opposite. It's exactly what you said.
It's like the halftime show at the Super Bowl. It's like there's another band. If you don't want to do it for free, somebody
else
will.
And they don't even
pay them. Yeah. Now they want you. Now they want the band
MC,
to play.
Though, right?
Yeah, they always pay the MC because he's kind of a... I mean, he's a necessary evil a lot of times, and people don't realize. It's like we talked about.
No,
like,
it's important.
And, you know, no offense to comedians, actors, or musicians, but, like, a lot of times that, and especially when it's all about them, and they need it to be about them, you have to be kind of an egocentric person to do that a little bit, you know? I mean, it kind of goes along the lines with confidence and everything else, but at the same time, you need someone else to kind of reel in that show, calm people down, you know, and say, okay, this guy's talking way too much, like I'm probably doing right now, so you got to cut in and say, hey, enough about this asshole. Let's go back to talk about my band.
Let's talk about high school basketball.
Let's talk about my band.
High school basketball.
You know, exactly. And so that's huge. A lot of times I have to be the bad guy, the bad cop. But and that's why they pay me the money to do.
Well, you are good cop, bad cop. You're both.
Totally.
Like you are totally both. You have to be both. But tell me like something that is crazy that you didn't expect to happen while you were on a gig.
You know, the highlights that I've had truly are the people I've met because. You know, I opened up for a band once, and I had no clue who these guys were. And all I did was give me a quick bio. I go out there and introduce them. And as I'm, like, studying the bio and I introduce them, I realize at that moment, I was in Daytona, the Daytona 500. I introduced Brooks and Dunn to come out on a free concert on stage.
That's awesome.
Number one selling country duo of all time, you know, and they come backstage.
They've been around for a while, too.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
15, 20 years, maybe?
Number one country duo of all time. I mean, it wasn't like they were a popular country band. So it was like, I didn't know who they were because I had never really listened to country. Yeah. And so it was epic meeting these guys that were so legendary. When I saw the people in the crowd that had literally spent the night there to get up front, to be 100 feet from them in this free concert, and I realized they're coming up, giving me a huge hug on stage. And then they, as I'm exiting the stage, they tell the crowd to make some more noise for me. I mean, it was like, talk about that dose of drug. I mean, that was like
I want this
shot instantly.
Yeah, it's kind of like one of those things where it doesn't matter what you're getting paid in those moments because – it's like that high that you get. It's
total.
Like it's that's
validation.
The drug. That's,
right.
Yeah, it's validation. It's also, you know, you get to a certain point where you start getting that and you're like, oh, I'm good at this too. You know, so that's the other trade-off. Any calamities? There's got to be like something TV stuff. Like I've done interviews where it's like the people are like interviewing me. They're like, "We got to redo that. We got to, you know, they'll stop or something will happen
because you screwed up."
No, not because of me. Because like, they screwed sometimes up. Sometimes it'll be like because of like if it's an outdoor shoot, like maybe a bird got in the shot or something stupid like that.
Bird shit on your face.
Yeah, I've had a few. You know, and I've had a few errors. Like it was actually a band once, man. I'll never forget this. Like I. And it's funny because at one point this band, I don't want to mention the name, they were mega huge.
Brooks and Dunn. Just kidding.
No, but they were huge at one point. And like there was this girl that was like, the mom told me the sob story. She was sick and everything. And, you know, this whole thing was going. And so like they had a VIP meet and greet, 10 people, you know. And I was like, this girl would have been the 11th. She drove like 7 hours to get there. I was like, you're good. You know, I had authority. I had my credential that said, you know. Talent. So I was like, I walked her back there, you know, and I mean, the band, I don't know if it came directly from the band, probably not, but the manager just lit me up.
Really?
You know, and I still had my mic on, you know, so it was like going out to everyone.
Oh, man. Yeah. Ooh. Did you want to just take him out?
Oh, I sure did, you know, but I mean, it's funny because this, ironically, this week.
He lit you up over one person.
Lit me up, and he's like, can't do this. He freaked out. I mean, in his head. It's probably he wants to make sure he lets them know he's doing his job to find a way that, hey, I'm important. You need to bring me on the road or whatever it is, you know. But stuff like that happens all the time. I mean, many times I work these gigs that are some of the, you know, places like festivals or things like that. And, you know, porta potty's my home away from home when I have to use it. And I've left the mic on several times, you know. And when I have my mic, I usually have control of my mic to make it hot. And if I can make it hot, it's usually the mic that goes.
You're still on, Nick.
That was the G-rated version.
Yeah, that's.
That was.
I've never met a porta potty that flushed.
Right there. Yeah.
That's pretty brutal.
But, yeah, I mean, so there's been calamities, and there's been. I mean, there's.
But that's how you grow. Totally. That's how you grow. Like, the funny thing is, like, you know, talking about those things, like, man, I remember my third show playing with the band. We had 260 people in the audience. I was so amped. Second song in, my bass player is like the head of his amp. Just like blows up and like falls over. It just starts smoking and falls over. And we're in the middle of a song and like we just all had to stop. We're like, oh, sorry, we got the technical difficulties. But like now, if I was in that same situation, I would know how to spin it and engage the crowd. But in that moment, I was terrified. I was just like, but that's how you grow, going through those things.
Yeah, and those kind of things have helped me greatly now because, you know, I did a concert once and I had to open up for a big act and, you know, they were supposedly 17 minutes behind schedule, no problem, go out there, entertain the crowd. And the guy was like, don't worry, it was a big corporate company, like, hey, we have a huge prize bin that we want you to utilize, which, you know, free t-shirts. I was like, that's a good 17 minute filler. And I tossing my shirts up, I come backstage, you know, and the stage manager goes, hey, it's not 17 minutes, he's like, it's an hour and 45 minutes out. And I'm like, meanwhile it's already an hour past their stage time. And it was a free concert, so like people are starting to get restless. And they had already, it was supposed to be like 10,000 people. They'd already broken the barriers. It was probably about 15 to 20,000 people.
Oof.
Yeah, and it was a NASCAR race. And on top of it, it starts raining. So usually they start dispersing to go into the race, no problem.
Right.
Like, yeah, we didn't miss the free. The concert needed to happen because the race wasn't going to happen because it got rained out. And these guys, for some reason, had partied a little hard on Saturday night. And it was Sunday.
Well, it's NASCAR too.
Right. And so it was. I had to go out there and entertain for, you know, 2 hours, and I had no more t-shirts. So it was like I had to go to like the big guns, and you know, as much as I like to think I'm a phenomenal MC, it's like they didn't come to see me, especially for an hour and 20 minutes.
Right,
so,
right.
But you know, many people came up to me afterwards and like, man, like you handled that like cool as a cucumber, and I thought it was horrible. I said this is horrendous, but
well, that's tough to carry a crowd.
Yeah, you're
and you're just talking to them. That's
yeah. And when he sent me back out there, I was like. I mean, I really wanted to tell him, you know what, you can keep my check. I'm just going to go home.
Because, right.
You know, and it's
growing pain.
Too much work for the way you're paying me.
So that stuff, the downside, but like upside, you know, like I said, you know, I'm born and raised here in LA. We grew up with you. And when I was in Staples Center and I had this gig, I went on tour, you know. So, I mean, the benefits of my job are endless, but I've lived the life of a rock star. I've lived the life of a stand-up comedian. I've played small crowds of 10. I've been in front of, you know, 85,000 people at U.S. versus Mexico soccer game this, you know, this last year. So it's range and just the diversity and all those different things.
I also feel like sometimes like hosts or MCs, they have a thankless job. Even like hosts, like for a comedy show, it's like they'll have good stuff And sometimes they're overlooked because they're not, like, part of the bill.
Well, like, I mean? The problem with, like, in comedy with the MC, I mean, it's usually another comic who's just, the way it's sort of developed, it's, like, it's the least experienced novice. It's, like, the youngest comic is the MC, and that, the comedy show should be set up the other way. Like, the best comic should be the MC.
Yeah.
To keep the show going. Like, but the way it's, the MC thing is just such a thankless job.
Right? It is a thankless job, but when you get good at it, then it's like you see the difference of somebody that's just like, oh my God, this guy again, versus, all right, yeah, this guy's like actually, he's pumping me up. Like, he's getting me excited for this concert or this, whatever it is. And yeah, you'd be surprised, like, how many people think they're good at that and they're terrible at it? You know what I'm saying?
Well, that's the biggest.
I know you noticed this. That's why I'm bringing that up.
It's the thing is, that for me is my profession. Like, right. I respect what you do. I respect what you do. Comedy, music, not my forte. I love them. But that's why it's so much better when you do have me there. Because if you have another artist bring you out, now there is people that are multi-talented. Some may do it right.
Right.
But that's not their job. And a lot of times, like, if I'm another comedian, I'm introducing this guy, I'm not going to put it all out there for this guy because I'm worried about my own stuff. You have a separate agenda a lot of times. And they're not the best people for that job. Their comedy may be killer. So it's like if you have an MC bringing out the comedians, I'm bringing you out. Like, you don't have Michael Jordan bringing out his teammates. You know what I mean? Right. Like, they have that guy. His job is to get the crowd hyped up, you know? Michael Buffer's not in the ring, you know, boxing. So it should be the same, I think.
He's the Let's Get Ready to Rumble.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Like, that guy gets paid something
Oh, it's insane.
He gets, like, $500,000 per word or something.
You
like,
can't even say that. Yeah, so you send him amazing. A check right now.
Damn it.
Tag him on that.
Well, we won't, alert any authorities about that. The check is in the mail. Right, Eddie? Eddie's like, what can I patent?
I gotta patent something.
Well, let's play a little bit of your reel. Why don't we show people what you do, Nick?
Here we go.
Here it comes.
Right. Hey, what's up, everybody? Nick Ferrara live.
Live at Dodger Stadium.
Live at Paul Brown Stadium.
Have a great day of racing.
Live with none other than Smokin' Joe Talamore.
Nick Ferrara at LA Live with none other than Sugar Shane Mosley.
New Jersey, are you ready? Are you ready for a musical vacation?
Last but never least.
We're here for an amazing cause tonight. A party with a purpose. Speaking of important, who is your pick for the Derby tomorrow? Do you have one?
I don't have one.
I know you have a direct relation to it, and it's not your first Jewel Ball. You're no stranger to this dance. Tell us about it.
No, yeah, I actually got the co-chair last year.
LA Coliseum, I'm at the Raiders game. You had a bye week, and you were out there. So I still have to this day a Raiders schedule signed by you, and you've always been one of the good guys, and I just want to thank you for that.
Well, I appreciate that. You know,
there's no better feeling than winning a Super Bowl, man. I got to say that, and it was great for us.
Congratulations. You deserve it.
Thanks, man.
My pleasure.
Who dat?
Who dat? We dat.
What a lot of people don't know is that you have an amazing involvement with so many different charities. You have You're Thinking It Right. I haven't been right on my picks. Do you have a Derby pick for tomorrow?
I'm saving all my secrets till tomorrow.
And I just need to know, were you a little disappointed that tater salad was not on the menu tonight?
When I first saw the mac and cheese, I cried for about two, three minutes.
Who's going to Las Vegas, Aztec Nation? We're going to find out.
They're up.
That's how we roll.
They won.
Yeah. Awesome stuff. Now, just, I don't know if you remember everybody that's on your reel, but list off some of the people that you were interviewing. I know T.O. is on
my reel's a little dated, but yeah, it's time to step up a new one. But yeah, T.O., and this is at the time when he was big time. You know, that was Roman Harper of the Saints. They just won the Super Bowl. Ron White from the Blue Collar Comedy Tour.
Shane Mosley.
Yeah, Sugar Shane Mosley.
So you get to meet a lot of
Warren
you.
Moon was on there.
Oh my God, yeah. Dude, old school, man. Yeah. I know you're way into sports, as am I, and like that must be exciting, like meeting some of your heroes. But the weird thing about what you do is also you're meeting your heroes and you're like interviewing them, like,
yeah.
Instead of like, I want you to sign this, you know, you're like you're on the level with them. Like they actually are probably like as excited to do the interview or just doing the press.
Yeah.
Like, so that's got to be a cool feeling. Like
it's
you meet
cool,
these people on this different plane than. You're not like a fan. You are a fan, but you're like, I'm going to play it cool. I'm going to ask you a couple questions, and we're going to pretend like everything's all good, but inside I'm going crazy because I've been a fan of your, whatever.
Well, you guys both know exactly what that's like. If you're doing a show with an epic comedian, it's like you want him to respect you as a peer.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you're like a little bit like, holy shit.
Oh, I love that feeling.
It's just like,
I love that feeling, and it's a little bit difficult. I'm sure. Did you feel like that when you just did the Tenacious D show?
What do you mean?
Aren't you a huge fan?
Yeah, it was great. It was so cool to see them. Yeah.
Were you just like playing it cool? Like, oh my god, I love these guys, but I'm gonna just play it cool.
Like. No, it's like I'm always. It's weird. Like I've sort of. I don't know. I guess because I've been here for so long, I've just sort of trained myself to never get
excited.
And I don't really get starstruck that much anyway. It's like very few people I hold that high up where I get starstruck with, and then they'd have to be like actual like legends for me to get like if I saw Steve Martin, I might be a little starstruck.
Right.
But like Tenacious D, like I was happy they were cool. Right. Like when I said hey to them, I was just happy they were cool. But I was like, oh, these guys are cool. I like these guys now.
Well, that's also the thing, Nick. When you're meeting these people, they have to be cool because they're on camera. So
yeah,
that's also a good thing.
I've had some interesting ones. I mean, I've had one NASCAR driver. He's a big time NASCAR driver. Won the Daytona 500 several times, and we're behind stage, and he tells me, he's like, I mean, we're on this huge stage. It's going to open up. I mean, this thing is massive. And he's like, it's going to open up, have this whole big intro and everything. And I just went up and said, hey, you know, it's a pleasure to meet you. It's an honor. And he's like, hey, let's just get this fucking thing over with. I'm done with this place, man. And I was like, whoa. And he got paid.
Wow.
But like a machine, as soon as I introduced the two-time Daytona 500 champion, ladies and gentlemen, at Daytona International Speedway, say hello. And he came out. And he was, I mean, he turned around.
I had to. I'm sorry. I got all juiced up, man. I was like excited.
He turned it on. So, you know, but I was like, well, he was like a complete prick backstage, you know, Michael Waltrip. And
and you just have to smile like, okay, cool, yeah, man. You know, you're a dick. Like,
that guy was big time. I was like looking at him the whole time. He was like sitting there with a huge, just shitty grin on his face. Like he was so happy. And I was like, this guy is a complete joker, man. You know, but, you know, I've also had the other end of that. You know, NBA All-Star game. I saw a guy playing for the Celtics recently, Evan Turner. And he came over to me and he was like, hey, man, I just want you. This is behind the stage after the interview. I was like, hey, man, I just want you to know I appreciate you.
And you're like, yeah, man, that's it. That's what it's about.
Right. And it was like, hey, that means a lot, man. And he said, I'm not going to lie. I only got about 2 hours sleep last night. And that's why I appreciate you. Like, you still made me look good out there. I was like, man, that's what I like to do, you know?
That's kind of what you do.
Have you ever had to ask any questions they weren't prepared for? Or they always sort of like know what's coming?
You know, a lot of times, like, they warn me, yeah, quite a bit, you know, they obviously. And a lot of times I've had to, you know, going back to NASCAR, like Michael Waltrip, I entered for – this is a huge stage. We're working with Toyota. It was the first time that they were coming out into NASCAR. So it was huge. I mean, NASCAR is a good old boy
sport. Yeah.
This is a Japanese company coming in for the first time ever in NASCAR history. And so they were coming out, rolling out this big thing. And, like, Michael Waltrip was leading that charge. He was, like, the captain of the Toyota team. And the day before the race started, they had given him some cheating violations. And so it was funny. This is before my interview. So maybe that's probably why he wasn't feeling too good that day.
Right.
But so obviously, I'm not going to be bringing those questions up because my client's Toyota.
Yeah.
But that being said, all the fans, they usually do a Q&A.
They want to hear that
today,
stuff.
Today, no Q&A with the fans because the fans will usually ask the really, really tough ones. So a lot of times, like, hey, we need you to conduct the Q&A. That's fine because they fire off the bad ones, you know.
Right.
And I'm not doing like as an investigative reporter.
You're not doing a Diane Sawyer piece,
right? And so it's like, and there's nothing. Most of the stuff is like they let you know what's out of bounds, what's not, you know. Yeah.
You're there to make them look good, not catch them off guard.
Well, has a fan ever asked a question? You're like, oh, he doesn't need to answer that. Like if you had to kind of step
you've gotten
there.
Some good ones. I've had some like, why do you suck so bad?
It's really?
Like, I can answer that one. Let me just make sure that's not directed towards me. That's directed towards you, right?
I believe I can answer that.
Right.
They're just like, I don't know what to say to that. That's crazy. What has been one of the most like childhood dream experiences that you've had while doing it?
You know, I was at Staples Center. I won a job that I really didn't think I was going to win for a Rock Band Live Tour. And they were looking at actors from the Twilight series because it was just coming out and it was a big thing. And all these emo bands were on this tour, you know. It was Panic at the Disco, The Plain White Tees, Dashboard Confessional, and The Cab. And so, you know, I was a little bit older than the demographic, and I didn't fit the bill. But these actors, went back to what I do. And during the audition, they were like, you know, this guy, like, it was in San Diego Convention Center. And they're like, this guy gets it. Like, he's lighting this crowd up of, like, six people. But I had to pretend it was 16,000.
Oh, yeah, you told me about that. I think you told me that. It was at the convention center in a huge hall, and there were five people in
there. I was basically a replacement. They were going to hire this guy. And they were, like, from Twilight, and they were like, he just doesn't, like, the stage presence. It's a different game coming out and looking out and seeing 20,000 faces compared to seeing a camera. And one person telling you, do this, read this.
And the other guys that were auditioning were in the room with you, right? Didn't you tell me that?
Yeah, they were there. And it was, you know, fast forward, and then I get a call. I was like, oh, there's no way I'm getting this gig. I just don't fit the bill. I knew I killed the inner, you know, audition. But several times I went out for, like, some hip-hop tours, and, like, they loved me. They, you know, one guy told me straight up. He's like, you'd get the job, but you're white. He's like, no offense,
that's
bro.
That's so dumb. That's so dumb.
But at the same time, I totally get it, because, like, if they're going, it's like marketing and packaging, anything else. Yeah, you know, they're going for street cred. They're like, okay, dude, we got Opie over here. Like, this guy, like, he's not really good for the street cred, you know? So I get it. You know, I'm not Eminem. So it's like, okay, I don't think it was even a racial thing. So I get it. I respect that he told me, but, you know.
Yeah, but that shit's just got to change. I mean, I think if you perpetuate that stuff, it just never goes away.
And no, I agree.
You know what I mean?
So, he told me. He was like,
I'm going to gong that. Like, yeah.
And that's I went out and did the audition, because he was like, they probably saw me, and they probably had the preconceived notion, like, okay, this next, you know, and then after I did it, the guy was like, wow.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and I can adapt, you know, it's like, I can
like,
change
I
it
can
up,
put on so. Blackface. Like, no, you cannot do that.
That's terrible. Man,
it's terrible.
So how often do you have to audition for these kind of gigs?
You know, it's strange, because it's like a niche gig that I have now. There's probably only about a small handful of guys that actually do this professionally now. There's a lot of MCs out there, don't get me wrong, but they have part-time jobs. They're working for a couple hundred bucks. They're doing these little gigs, which are great, you know. But as far as the career guy goes, what I do, then, you know, a lot of them are actors, comedians, so they have to do it. So, you know, for me, that's my passion, so that's why it shows when I work.
Do you do mostly live events?
Mostly live events. Yeah. It's transitioned a lot of time into TV, because I'll be working a live event, and they'll say, hey, like, we like you better than the guy we have. Can you just do this quick drop for us, you know? So I do a lot of free work a lot of times, because I'm like, but,
Have you tried to get into more of, like, the TV thing? Are you interested in, like, game show type
stuff? Yeah, that's the next stop now. That's where I'm transitioning now to do that. And the big thing was, like, get some reels together. And honestly, it's like anything else. We're our own worst enemies. You know, I keep putting it off and finding reasons not to do it. But the more and more that I do what I do, I realize I do need to do this, because...
Well, that's where the consistent money is, and, like, you know.
Totally, and I can't travel, you know. I mean, as much as the traveling is fun and I enjoy it, it's like, there's no way I can keep this up.
Yeah, you don't want, I mean, it's fun. It's like same with comedy. It's like, being on the road is fun, but after a while, you're like,
I'm done traveling.
It's enough.
It's like spring break. You go a few times, you've seen it, you've done it.
It wears on you.
I'm kind of going through this, like this phase where I've toured a lot, and now I'm touring very, like, 1 week every 2 or 3 months.
It's just a lot. It takes a lot out of you.
But I miss it. Like, I miss it. I'm like, oh, man, I don't want to miss it. But it's only because I need to go out, and then I go, oh, I can't wait to go home. You know what I mean?
Like, there's something for, like, that TV gig where you just show up for work several hours a week, and you get the residual income, and it's sort of a steady thing.
Yeah, it's usually a set schedule. You know, my job's, like, sometimes I may only work 4 hours that day, but like, sometimes I'll be on the mic literally for 8 hours, because if there's something that goes wrong or they need someone, they just throw me in there, and it's kind of the nature of the beast, and that's what I'm there for. So, like, I need to be on call, you know, and time changes and stuff. I fly out, you know, it's like an obstacle race. I have to be up 6 a.m. in, like, Hartford, Connecticut, you know. By the time I get there, it's midnight, so I'm on an hour sleep.
That's brutal.
Yeah, so it's not as glamorous. I'm not trying to make it seem like it is, but there's definitely some upsides to it. Don't get me wrong. I wouldn't trade it for the moon, but...
Yeah, but also if you have that TV gig, you become the star of the show.
Right, and for a long time I didn't think I could do that, but now I know. I'm like, I see guys do it that I know I've worked with and stuff like that, and I've worked with a few people that actually have done very big things, like as far as television hosting and things like that. And one of my buddies, he's like, he does his own radio show also, Bob Guinea. He was like one of the original Bachelors, and like he told me straight up, he's really, really good at it, and he told me, hey, like, you know, you need to do TV. Like, you got it.
That's what the money is.
Yeah. But it's nice to hear someone that's actually doing it get it. And
and
he also knows. He told me, he's like, you know, my end was that I was the Bachelor, you know? So, like,
well, it helps when you have that fame or that celebrity. And then, you know,
exactly.
I mean, that's the thing with, like, game shows now. They're taking, like, well-known comics and well-known actors, and they become...
Just follow the money.
It's like the killer, it's the killer of our industry, because you look at all the game shows now, and it's like they're hosted by chefs and comics. And some of those guys are good for that, you know? Like, who do they bring in for The Voice? They brought in a Kardashian. It's like, it's just strictly fame numbers, which... Yeah,
now it's really, like, a lot like that.
Well,
like,
everything's branding now.
Yeah. Having the Kardashian was like, what are you doing? This is so...
Because it makes sense in their heads.
It's just the number...
Well, she started, she did, like, a radio show, so that is why she felt like she could do the TV thing. But, dude, the TV thing, it's not easy what you do. You know what I mean? It's like a lot of it's timing, a lot of it's like being comfortable on the camera, being comfortable to engage people. And sometimes the people you're engaging aren't people that you that want to be engaged necessarily. Like you have to pull, it's like pulling teeth a little bit. I mean, I've had some hosts where it's like that, where I've done some TV shows and it's just like, really? That's the question you're going to ask me? Like,
I'm ready to go.
You got to adapt to every situation, and you guys both probably know this better than anybody. I mean, you could give 10 comics the same joke. There's going to be one that you like better than the other nine.
Right.
You can give nine talented bands the same song, and you're going to like the way that one delivers it. Now, the same person might like a different comic.
Right.
But usually, the majority, there's 50 people, maybe 60, 70% are going to like the same one, you know? So that's the same thing. It's like you have to be able to adapt to your situation. It's all about deliverance, how you deliver it, you know, timing, like you said. So there's a lot more that goes into it than people think. And, you know, people always think they can do what I do because they think, okay, I know I can't be a rock star because I don't know how to play an instrument.
Right.
Comedy, I'm not good at that.
But oh, I can just go up there and
can talk.
No, it's not. It's actually probably one of the hardest things, to be honest.
Well, most people have this preconceived notion, oh, you're just a human mic stand. But you're not. I mean,
you're an entertainer.
You're an entertainer. You're the, and like you said earlier, the captain of the ship. You're driving the show.
And you have to do it in less time. Like, if a musician has a song, if 10 seconds go by and you didn't, you know, sing the right note or you didn't sing the right word, you got another 3 or 4 minutes to get through that you're like, okay, I can make up for this.
Right.
You have sometimes 15 seconds to get everybody hyped, everybody just amped. Know what to say, when to say it.
Sometimes you have 2 hours you have to kill.
Without any t-shirts. Yeah, but I mean, so, and sometimes you're doing it, and like, it's sometimes you're doing it during a set change, you know? So like, the stage crew's behind you, and it's strange. There's a lot of times, like, you don't get the respect that the artists get. So like, you know, they're like, those guys, stage hands, they'll just knock you over. They don't care. Like, they got a job to do, but I mean, they would never do that to like the band or anybody, you know? So
you mean the crew guys?
The crew guys.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, there was some, I had some issues. Whack. I mean, I was on the road, you know, I had a dressing room and stuff, and it was like, this is kind of cool, you know? But, like, one time my dressing room didn't have a shower, so, like, I went into one of the dressing rooms. It was, they were already gone. The band had taken off. They were on their bus onto the next city. I was like, I'm going to go take a shower in here. I mean, I was dripping with sweat from the gig. And, you know, afterwards, like, hey, you can't do that. You know, like, it's in the writer. No one go in their dressing room. Like, they were gone. Like, I was just...
Right.
So there's so many weird things.
Breaking the law.
Yeah, you know?
We must have gone to the same high school, Nick. They taught us to break the law.
That's what happens.
That's where all the thugs live, Arcadia.
It was called Badass High School, if you just want to know.
I bet.
And everybody there is called Nick or Nikhil. That's it.
That's it.
You're the first person Eddie's met from high school, and you happen to be a Nick, too. He's just like, seriously, dude?
Seriously?
Any other names? Oh, Nicole. There's a Nicole there, too. Yeah. So let me ask you this. Have you ever hosted a gig where you were like, I can't believe I'm hosting the hot dog championship of, you know, whatever. Like, has there ever been an event where you were like, this is the craziest thing I've ever hosted in my life? That wasn't really like necessarily sports. It could have been like, you know, a bikini contest, whatever it was. Was there something that stands out that you're like, I can't believe I'm hosting this. This is awesome.
Yeah, you know, a few times,
like a porn convention, he's trying to get to it, like the porn awards.
Like there's always like something that is, you know, there's a gig that I've done. I think it was for the Outrigger gig in Santa Barbara, like a company that of people that love to like boat.
Right.
And dude, it was. I mean, we've done it like 2 or 3 years, you know, back in, you know, early 2000s. And it was the strangest gig. It was super fun, but there were people like running around in diapers and just like. Just it was weird, but there are things that I just remember from that gig that I'll never forget.
Yeah, know? I've had a few. I mean, there's a few of those, but you know, I had one. It was for the LA Auto Show, and I was like, oh, this is pretty sweet. It'd be like a big time job. Be talking about some sweet cars or something. And, like, you know, I was in there, and they gave me my mic set up, and then I saw like the table, and it was like they were doing demos and stuff, and I was like, I'm like the ShamWow guy right now. You know? I'm like, this is like exactly what I'm doing. And it was like,
I'm working a blender at Costco.
Right, exactly. You know, it was like, I did that. And I was like, as long as the check doesn't bounce, you know.
Right.
It's
you like, have to get excited for it.
You have to get excited.
I think as entertainers, you know, I think you just have to sometimes suck it up and get excited for gigs that you just don't really want to be doing. You know what I mean? Like, you were talking about it, I think, 2 weeks ago, how you just did the Shrine in front of 6,000 people, and then the next night or 2 nights later, you played.
Like 3 nights later, I think it was in front of like 8 people at a bar.
And I go through that, too. Like, I'll play a huge festival in front of 10,000 people or 8,000 people or something like that, and then I'll come back and I'll do like a fashion mall gig, and I'm like, that is entertainment. That is, you know, nobody in their careers has to do things like that other than entertainers, where it's like you do the big time thing and it's sandwiched right next to the gig, like what you just said. You were the ShamWow guy.
Super Bowl is a prime example of that this year. I had a gig just like that, you know, and I was working.
How was that?
Yeah. It was amazing. You know, my client, you never know with these clients like what you're going to be doing. So most of my clients are big corporate clients. So the client was Papa John's and they were like, hey, we need you here to talk about this new bacon cheeseburger pizza. So I was like, and they're giving out free samples. So I was like, I'm like a used car salesman slanging bacon, you know, free slices of bacon cheeseburger pizza. But then
at the Super Bowl.
At the Super Bowl. And so I was like, yeah, all right. Like again, like, oh, there goes the glory. I just told everyone I'm at the Super Bowl. Hopefully no one finds out. And then they're like, hey, we need you to interview DeMarco Murray in front of this crowd. And like then it was like, ah, this is what it's about, you know. I'm interviewing the NFL's leading rusher, and like they're like, wow, like you totally just killed that. And I'm like, yeah, that's what I do. Like I can do the bacon cheeseburger pizza thing, you know, but
for a price.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean it's you just never know. But like you said, the minute I'm fake, it's just no good. You know, if it's not authentic, the crowd is way smarter than a lot of times we give them credit for. So it's like, and they feel you. As soon as you're a fraud to them, you're done. Like, they hate you. They wish death upon you, you know?
So let me ask you this. What's like an influence as far as a host? Like, I mean, you mentioned Michael Buffer, but who else? Like, who's a host that you're like, dude, you're rocking it right now?
Yeah, you know, it's strange. Without sounding, you know, too cliche, but like my hat's off to Ryan Seacrest. I mean, the guy is just a machine, you know, and he does it from all angles, and he puts a lot of work into his craft, and it's not like
that guy never sleeps.
He never sleeps.
Well, he's good. He's
still
really
has
good
his morning radio show, and it's crazy.
But you know what? Yeah. That's what, like, the one thing I respect about him. He started at Star 98.7. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And you know, he was like not really a name, and it was not really
Seacrest for the ride.
Yeah, but he was. Yeah. He made that show like. It became about him, and it wasn't like ever really about him, but he just became like the star of the show, and it propelled him to do all the American Idol stuff and all the the Kiss FM. So it's like when you got to strike when the iron's hot, and dude, he does that. That's a great example. Yeah. Ryan Seacrest. You know, I think Regis is an amazing host.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not doing it anymore. It's sad to see that other era, you know, like the Lettermans and the Lenos and, you know, the Regis, you know.
Dick Clark.
Well, you know, but it's true. I mean, those guys had a vibe. They had a way of presenting.
Well, there was also, like, that's what classic. They did. They weren't something else and did this.
Right.
Right.
They were hosts. Like, Dick Clark was.
Yeah, Chuck Woolery's of the
Chuck
world.
Woolery
Chuck
was.
Chuck Woolery, man.
Those are the guys.
They were MCs. They weren't comics that are doing this or actors that are doing. I mean, that's what they did. That's why they were so great at it.
Yeah. You know, and, you know, there's a few guys left, you know, that like the originals, like Pat Sajak, you know, but Alex Trebek. But those are just true game show hosts, and they have their niche, but it's different, you know, it's a dying breed.
It's because of the whole branding thing. It's the branding thing has ruined everything.
Right.
It has ruined art on every level, branding has. Well, because it's all about name recognition. It's not about how well you do what you do. It's about
that.
Okay, who knows this person's name? Let's get them in here to do this.
Far more valuable than talent in their eyes.
Exactly. And it,
but I think it's gonna it'll change.
Everything.
It'll change.
I don't think so.
Because when people get tired of it, it's like, you know, you don't need to see Paris Hilton DJing at a club.
Yeah, but they're still gonna
still gonna get the work.
Yeah.
But I don't think, you know, like the Kardashian, I don't think the Kardashian's gonna be like this huge host or hostess. You know, I don't think that's
Yeah, but that name is gold.
Yeah, but for other
and
reasons.
People hear that name, they're like, yeah, put her in the Kardashian.
Well, but they're not you'd see like the Pat Sajaks, the Alex, like she's not going to host Jeopardy.
No,
she's not going to be.
She's always going to get.
She'll get.
She's going to walk into every job interview with a huge advantage because of that stupid name.
Right. She's built in a nice audience already, and that's what they think. But a lot of times it backfires.
It backfires all the time. It's like people that get development deals because they have 500,000 Twitter followers.
Right.
And like, oh, they have a show. Oh, this is terrible.
Yeah.
But they got 500,000 Twitter followers. It doesn't translate. But
it goes back to what I said. Like we, you know, the audience is a lot smarter than we give them credit for. Like. And, you know, consumers out there, they do want certain things, but just because I follow somebody on Twitter doesn't mean I want to watch them for 30 minutes.
But, you know, the gatekeepers are stupid.
Right.
That's the problem.
The gatekeepers are dumb, but you know what? It's people like you, Nick, Eddie, myself, that, you know, we're out there doing it, and you get better as you keep doing it, and you keep doing it, and you keep doing it. And eventually, there is a tipping point, and you become the Ryan Seacrest. Ryan Seacrest started like that. I mean, that guy was doing college radio and doing, like, really small stuff. Then he got into bigger things, and it just kept on, you know, snowballing.
Well, he became the name.
But he's also good at it. Like, people
he was
make
great
fun
at
of
it, but he became the name. I mean, he became the name. Now Seacrest is like, yeah. but it's hard to break through because there's people like a Kardashian standing in your way because of her name.
Yeah, but I don't think Kardashian will ever be in competition with Seacrest.
No, but it's in competition with, you know, you.
That's true.
That's the problem.
Right. But you know what? Like, people will see the difference. Where can people see? You're doing it. You're flying out to an event tomorrow.
Yeah,
right?
I'm headed out to Kentucky Derby this weekend. So
that's going to be so fun.
It's amazing. Yeah, you got to put that on your bucket list. And that's another prime example. Like, you know, on that, my buddy said, hey, they're having this contest for the chief party officer of the Kentucky Derby. He's like, you have to enter this. So, you know, we grew up across the street from a racetrack and everything. Right. And
we didn't realize was an epic racetrack.
We didn't at the time, you know, looking back. And so I created this little YouTube video for the chief party officer. And, you know, all these, you know, international videos were coming in. My video won. So, like,
that's awesome.
They flew me in as a celebrity representative for the Kentucky Derby and the infield. And I went to all these red carpet events, and I was getting interviewed. And, you know, I did the press conferences and international press releases.
That's awesome.
It was really, really cool. And, you know, while I was there, though, that's a lot of times what I have to do is when I get my foot in the door, I have to kick it open and ram it down people's throat. Here's what I do.
Right.
And they were a little skeptical. They're like, we want to give this guy, we want him to win because he's good, he's well-spoken, but they don't want people to be like, you hired a professional to win this contest. This is BS. But my video was the best, and it was, like, really good. And so I got that gig while I was there. I was like, hey, I'm a host and an MC. You know, I would love to work with you again. I stayed in touch with the marketing director. It's a lot of follow-up, a lot of, you know, reaching out and networking, as they say. And, you know, they had hired me to host a game show there called Bet or No Bet. And it was phenomenal. And so I got to host a game show in Kentucky, and it was a true experience. That's why I said a game show is really, really, really cool because you meet real people that win lots of money and they love life. So,
and that's exciting too. You facilitate that. You become that. You know, like that energy. It's a positive energy, I think. And the Kentucky Derby is so fun.
Kentucky Derby.
How many years have you been doing it? It's I went three years ago. I think 3 years ago I went, and it was.
I was there. I didn't see you.
But. It rained. It rained. Does it always rain there?
It's like a weird thing. Yeah, it's not supposed to rain this year, but I wouldn't be surprised if it does because it always does. It's like a weird thing.
I was in a seersucker suit with a bunch of bachelors for this bachelor party. All of us were getting drenched. Everybody was hammered, and then we ended up sneaking into, like, you know, those box seats that are like uber expensive.
Yeah.
Everybody left in this one area because of the rain. So we actually watched the Derby from these like amazing seats, and it stopped raining. It ended up being like this epic trip.
You know what I mean? The pageantry and the celebrity. Yeah, it's really awesome. Cool.
That's a great event to do. Yeah. So you've done it 5 years in a row.
5 years in a row. You know, it goes back to, like, you know, we're in Hollywood. Wake up, Hollywood, right here.
That's right.
I've seen far more celebrities on the road than I've ever seen here in L.A., you know, being one race here.
Especially when you do events like that.
Yeah, when they come together, you know, and you get the big names, and, you know, so it's pretty interesting. You know, I sat at tables and had bourbon with, you know, Ashton Kutcher, and I mean, just
That's awesome.
It's so cool that it would never happen here, you know, it just happened because it was the Derby and because of the timing, and they saw me in the MC hosting the red carpet, and they're like, come over here, let's do a shot, you know, and it's been stuff like that is like what I really love. Like, I saw Brandon Lloyd 1 year and he like won my fantasy football championship. And after I interviewed him, I said, while we're filming, I said, I just want to personally thank you for winning my fantasy football championship. And then he's like, thank me for what, man? He's like, I need to get paid. He's like, you're buying me drinks tonight. And I was like, you got it, man. So then later that night, I saw him walking through the club with literally two bottles of Dom P. And I said, hey, man, I was thinking like a beer, not Dom P. Like, hopefully that didn't go on my tab, you know? He came over while I was filming with somebody else, Jennifer Lawrence. He, like, pours it, and I drink champagne. Like, then I'm interviewing Jennifer Lawrence at the same time.
And you're like, what? This is crazy.
And it was crazy, you know? And, like, I remember her when she was – when I interviewed her, it was right after Winter's Bone came out. So this is before Hunger Games. So, like, that's the kind of stuff. And it's, like,
that's amazing.
Epic, you know?
And, right, as the stars are rising. Yeah. That's cool. That's super cool. Or, well, Nick, where can people find you?
You know, you can find me online at Reniculous is my old name, you know. I'm not really
and you know, you told me that, like, you're like, yeah, that's my old name. I'm like, dude, that is so the shit though, dude. You gotta wear that with pride, man.
I do.
Reniculous.
I think it was kind of like I got pigeonholed into, like, oh, that's the party guy, like, hire him, he's just a loud, like, crazy guy. I'm like, no, I'm a professional MC and a host, and so it's Nick Ferrara, MC, host, hype man. I can get Reniculous if you want me to, you know, and I got that
spell
name.
Spell it out for everybody.
RINICKULOUS. So Reniculous1, the number one at Twitter, and then on Facebook you can find me Nick Ferrara.
Spell it out.
Facebook / NICKFERRARA.
Cool. Yeah, man. All right. Great to reunite, man. Apache Fever.
That sounds good.
Woohoo!
What a pleasure. Let's do it again sometime.
Dude, absolutely. Nick Ferrara, thank you for being a guest. Until next week, Eddie.
Good night, Hollywood.
I miss you.
Good night, Hollywood.
Good night, Hollywood.
We'll be right back.